That question is being raised pertaining to the category of women in halacha, in Jewish law. And basically, women are obligated in mitzvos. They're included in the taryag, the system of taryag. But they have certain exemptions. The general rule is they're obligated in all the negative commands. They're not exempted. And in all of the positive commands, but they're exempted from positive commands that are time-bound. For example, sukkah. It's a positive command, and it has a specific time. The reason for the exemption, by the way, the exemption means that they don't have an obligation, but if they perform it, they fulfill the mitzvah. There's the concept in Judaism of an obligation of a mitzvah and the fulfillment of a mitzvah. So one can perform a mitzvah that one is not obligated in and obtain the fulfillment and the benefit, the reward, etc. That's something to remember. It means to say, in a sense, that women have more choice. You can look at it that way. The reason why they've been removed from the obligation is because in terms of there's a whole Torah system. Our obligations are not only in terms of perfecting ourselves, that's first and foremost in Judaism, but to create a society and perpetuate the Torah system to the next generation. That is to say that it's not just there for your personal benefit. You have an obligation to live it and perpetuate the system. That's the basis of the mitzvah of having children. So you have to get married, you have to establish a family, you have to have children, and you have to see to it that the next generation will perpetuate the Torah. Now, in the framework of that system, the special responsibilities of the woman. That's also a service of God, by the way. A service of God is not limited just to doing mitzvot. There are certain activities that can't be formulated as a mitzvah, but that's part of the service of God. That when you're taking care of your children and raising and the household, the family, etc., not every activity specifically is a mitzvah that you make a bracha over, but that's service of God. So the woman's role is very significant in terms of the family, and especially with regard to the children, and especially with regard to when they're young. And it would conflict with time, as you could see. Someone who's nursing a child and so forth can't be asked to drop all that and go build a sukkah or go out and live in the sukkah. So there is a conflict between the responsibilities of the woman with regard to the perpetuation of the Jewish society and the Jewish system and certain time-bound mitzvos. And thus, there's an exemption. Now, that exemption, of course, works across the board. That's the way you have to understand the halachic system. In other words, we don't say that when women are single, they have the obligation, then when they get married, they don't have. That's not the way the system works. It becomes categorical that women are not obligated in these mitzvos and they're left with the option to do it. Thus, they have choice in these cases. If they have the opportunity, it won't conflict. And if they so desire, they can do it. But if they don't desire, they don't do it, they're not held liable. That's the way the system has been constructed. Essentially, from the din of the Gemara, a woman is not even excluded from Kriyas HaTorah. That is to say, of course, if a woman davens with a minyan, women themselves do not constitute a minyan. That is a responsibility that's given over to men. That men constitute a minyan, 10 men, and women do not. That they can't create. You could have 1,000 women. It's not a minyan. It's a qualitative phenomenon that requires men. And however, if women, question just been raised about so-called women's tefillah groups. If women get together and daven amongst themselves, and you call it a tefillah group, there's nothing intrinsically wrong with that. Obviously, you have to understand what the kavana, what the intention is. If they do not have an intention that they're creating a new thing, if they feel that they're creating something new, a new institution, then that's prohibited. You can't add to the Torah. And since the Torah does not define, there's no such thing as a woman's prayer group, so then you can't create one. However, if the intention is merely that we're davening, and we realize that it's no different than if I was davening alone, but we want to get together and then we we daven and then we discuss Torah, whatever you want to do, as long as you're not making any changes, that is all right. However, you are losing out on the benefit of davening with a tzibur. That is, the highest level of tefillah is tefillah b'tzibur, to daven with the minyan. When women come to the shul and they daven together with the tzibur, then they're obtaining the benefit. They do become part of the tzibur. It's not as though they're davening in isolation. Now, in terms of, for example, Kriyas HaTorah, technically speaking, we don't do this, but the Gemara mentions that Hakol Ola L'Minyan Shiva, that everyone could be counted for the minyan of seven people who are supposed to read, even Katanim, even children. I was just learning on Friday night, we have a halacha of the week in my shul, from the Rav, that somebody asked the Rav, Rav Soloveitchik, the question that there was this Balkari, this Torah reader, and he didn't like one. He was one of the guys in the shul. He didn't like him. And he told him that when he reads the Torah, he doesn't have him in mind. He's having everybody in mind, but he's reading it for them, but he's not having him in mind. So the person asked the Rav whether he should go to a different shul because he's not fulfilling, is he not fulfilling his obligation? So the Rav answered that he does not have to go to another shul, because it's not that the one who's reading the Torah has you in mind. It's not. Because if the Gemara says that a child, a katan, can be called up, and a woman can be called up. And in those days of the Gemara, you didn't have one Balkore, whoever was called up read the portion. Okay, so how could a katan, for example, how could a child be motzi a gadol? A child can't fulfill an obligation because the child is not commanded in the matter. But rather, he said, it's not that he's reading it for you. It's the mitzvah is that the Torah should be publicly read. So it's a form of Torah study, which is public. So once even a child can read the Torah. And you have to listen. Your fulfillment is through listening. So I don't need you to have me in mind. You read, I listen. Even if you don't have me in mind, it's not that you're reading for me. Where that would be different is in the case of Amalek, perhaps. That if we say that Amalek, or the reading of the Megillah, for example. In the reading of the Megillah, each person has an obligation to read the Megillah. So therefore, the one who gets up is reading it on my behalf. Okay? So he has me in mind. Thus, in that situation, if he said, I don't have you in mind, then it would be a problem. Then it would be a problem. Whether such a person is qualified, he shouldn't be... I mean, that's the general. If a person like that, someone who represents the Tzibur must have the entire Tzibur in mind. So, okay? If he didn't have one person in mind, he shouldn't be doing it at all. But nevertheless, in the case of Kriyas HaTorah, which we're talking about, it doesn't factor in. It's not an issue. Because he's not fulfilling us. He's not being motzi us. Question about the chukim in the Torah, the right. So-called statutes.
In other words, the ones that...
It's a fundamental principle that the Torah... Of course, the Torah is from Hashem. The Torah is Chachmas Hashem. And we extol the wisdom of Torah. And that wisdom enlightens us and... not just enlightens us, but also is essential to our perfection. So that the Torah, the essence of the Torah is wisdom. However, there are different kinds, different species, so to speak, of laws. The mishpatim are those laws whose necessity is obvious on the surface. Everybody would legislate those kinds of laws. Not in the exact same way, but laws against theft and help your friend, etc., honoring your father and mother. Then there are the so-called chukim. The chukim are laws where the reason is not evident. People make a tremendous mistake about that. And it's one thing to say the reason is not evident. It's another thing to say that it doesn't contain rationality. That's absolutely forbidden to say a thing like that. All of the Rishonim, all of the... authorities maintain that every mitzvah of the Torah has a chazal. Chazal say that Shlomo HaMelech explored the reasons for all of the chukim. He discovered the reasons for all of them except for the Parah Aduma and the Red Heifer. And Moshe Rabbeinu discovered the reason for the Parah Aduma. So from this, the Rambam makes this point. You must deduce that they all have reasons. But the reasons are hid because the Torah is on many, many different levels, and there's different levels of wisdom that people have. So that if you study, the more you study, and if you're on a level, and if you merit, then you'll uncover reasons for the chukim. You'll uncover reasons for them. But they must, even if you don't, our observance of the Torah is not, this is another mistake that people, anti-rational people make. And they impute to the rationalist approach that, oh, you only keep it if you find a reason, but if you don't have a reason, you're not going to keep it. That is not true. One's commitment to the Torah is absolute, whether you understand the mitzvah or don't, because it's from Hashem. So that's the idea of Na'aseh v'Nishma, that we're absolutely committed to keeping the Torah. However, we realize that keeping it per se is not the same as keeping it in understanding and growing and being enlightened by it. One has to devote one's entire life to gaining more and more wisdom. So the chukim are those hidden treasures. There's two kinds of treasure in life. There's the overt, obvious, and then there's hidden treasure. And that's part of your task, to try and discover the reasons. Generally speaking, also, these are more profound things. And Judaism also maintains, it's a very important point, when you're dealing with a system like Judaism, and it's intended to maintain an entire society, and you see how people can distort religions with religious zeal and fervor, so certain things are revealed, and many, many things have to be hidden from the masses. And it's permitted. In general, there's the nigla and the nistar. There's the nistaros. There's a hidden portion. And that's very, very, you have to be very, very careful, because if the average person were to be exposed to things that he's not prepared to hear, it would harm him. It would harm him. Knowledge can be a harmful thing as well as a beneficial thing. And thus, a person has to develop, just like certain foods. When an infant, you can't give him certain foods, he would kill him, but later on they become very good for him. The same is true with regard to the hidden. There are parts of the Torah that must be hidden, and a person has to know. It says, for example, benifla mimcha, that which is too wondrous for you, don't investigate. Don't go into areas that are beyond you. Unfortunately, that's violated today By the study of so-called Kabbalistic works, by every masses and people, everybody's reading. The truth is, there is no such thing as a Kabbalistic work that's for the masses. But unfortunately, this has been trodden upon, and people quote all kinds of doctrines which they don't even know what they're talking about. So that's a gross violation of this principle, that the matters that are to be kept hidden should be kept hidden.